Again. So I forgot to mention before we took our break, but obviously a bunch of you noticed that there are books for sale today, and I'll be signing books at the end of the lunch break over here. And there's also some flyers and postcards that are free for with like a little teaching on them, so feel free to just check some of that stuff out on the break. So let's move into our first practice. And so to do this, generally this works the most efficiently time-wise if we do it in silence, the first part. So I want to invite you to turn to someone near you to partner with as a practice partner, and to try to do that in silence if you can. And if you don't have someone who's obviously right next to you, raise your hand, raise it really high, and then look around the room for someone else whose hand is up. Wow, this is the most silent group I've ever been with. I'm serious. That's really impressive. Notice how quickly that happened. So is there? It's thanks to Tim. Yeah. Anybody doesn't have a partner? You don't. Okay. Why don't you come bring your chair here, and you and I can work together. So we're going to do a series of practices to experiment with bringing more presence into relationship and conversation. So this is the foundation. If we can't be present, it's pretty difficult, if not impossible, to use any of the other tools that we've learned. So first I want to invite you to just close your eyes, or gaze downward if that's more comfortable for you, and turn your attention inwards. Feel the sensations of your body sitting, the contact with the chair or the ground. Notice how that feels. Notice how it feels to have your attention turned inwards. In a moment, not yet, but in a moment, I'm going to invite you to open your eyes. And so just notice what happens hearing that. Does anything change internally? And so whenever you're ready, I'm going to invite you to slowly open your eyes, become aware of your partner. You can make eye contact if you want. You can look away. You don't have to maintain eye contact. But just notice how it is to be sitting in front of another human being. And notice the difference between this experience, whether you're making eye contact or not, and the experience of just being internal. It's fine to be natural if you feel the impulse to smile or a facial expression arises. You don't have to inhibit that. Just notice, just explore. How is it to just be quiet together? And then when you're ready, I invite you to turn the attention inwards again, either by closing the eyes or just gazing downwards. Notice if any energy was stimulated by having the eyes open and engaging visually. What's the difference between having your focus internally and having it externally? So next, I want to invite us to open the eyes again, and this time see if you can maintain some awareness of your body, whether it's just feeling your hands on your lap or the contact with the chair. But go ahead and open the eyes when you're ready, making eye contact when and how it feels comfortable for you. And see if you can maintain some awareness of your own body, feeling its weight or warmth, the sense of sitting, even as you see and are aware of this person in front of you. Grounding your attention in your body. Notice the difference between making eye contact and not making eye contact in your ability to stay connected to yourself. And so you can look away or whatever feels comfortable or natural. So just taking a pause here in the exercise. So just make a mental note of whatever you noticed during that process, even if it was just like, this is boring, just be aware of that. So this is just the first step, right? What's it like to make eye contact with another human being? Sometimes we get the giggles, it happens. What's it like to just be with someone else? Does it feel vulnerable? Does it feel, you know, exciting or interesting? So next we're going to start adding in some words. But we're going to do this without having to talk about anything that has much meaning. So to just see, what's it like to activate the vocal cords while being with another human being? And can we try to maintain some awareness as we're using this capacity for speech? Okay? So the way that I want to invite us to do this is to meditate out loud for a couple minutes, one person at a time. So one person will be in the role of speaking and the other person will be in the role of listening. The speaker, and I'll demonstrate this in a moment, is just going to narrate from moment to moment any physical sensations that they're aware of. You don't have to name every single physical sensation that's happening. It's impossible. It's fine if by the time you name the sensation, it's changed or is gone already. That's fine. Try to name as much as possible the actual sensation rather than a concept or a story. So for example, instead of saying I'm aware of having a cold, which is a story, I might say, I feel some pressure in my head. Or I feel an impulse to cough in the top of my chest. So that's the difference between the story, the concept, and the actual experience. So we're trying to bring our attention to the actual physical sensory experience and then just name that from moment to moment so that what we are speaking is actually something that's present. And in this way, we're exploring what's it like to be with another human being and speak while trying to remain present. Make sense? Okay, so I'll just demonstrate this for a moment, just so you can get a sense of what it might sound or look like. And then we'll choose roles, speakers and listeners, and then I'll guide us through the activity. So I'm aware of the pressure and hardness of my bottom on the cushion, and then feeling my shoulders relax. Some warmth or kind of heat up here. And I feel the sort of hardness of a throat lozenge in my cheek. Aware of the coolness of the air entering my nostrils. And then the shoulders relax a little bit again. Moisture on the lips. And feeling the hands touching. Feeling my belly and torso expand with an in-breath, and then the vibration of my voice and my chest. Okay, so like that, just moment to moment, what is it you're noticing? What's happening? So first, I'm going to ask for a volunteer in each pair to raise your hand to speak first. So if one person in each dyad could raise your hand, so you just know who's speaking first. Now this is a interpersonal meditation. So we'll start with a bell, we'll end with a bell, and other than the person who's speaking, naming the physical sensations, will be in silence. So this is one of those discrete training exercises I was mentioning. So first, invite you to take a moment to center yourself in whatever way feels authentic for you. Now, if you're the listener, I invite you to set an intention to listen with presence, to see if you can stay fully present as you listen. And if you're the speaker, experiment with trying to maintain an embodied awareness as you speak these sensations. So when you're ready, allowing your eyes to open, starting with a breath, starting now. So allow yourself to come back to silence, just turning the attention inwards. Take a moment or two to notice what that was like. What was challenging, what was easy, anything you learned or noticed. And then we'll trade roles. So if you were speaking, now you'll be listening. And the instruction for you is to see if you can listen with complete presence. So this is a very important training. Can we stay aware and connected to ourselves while listening to someone else when there's not even anything going on? Or does our mind wander? Do we get lost in the other person or in our thoughts? So bringing awareness to the process of listening. And if you're the new speaker, can you be aware of your body? Can you stay present as you're speaking, as you're naming these sensations from moment to moment? So whichever role you're in, setting an intention. Allowing the eyes to open. Starting with a breath. Starting now. And letting the words go, turning your attention inwards. Your body, and then notice, what did you learn? What was challenging? What was easy? Did you lose the sense of presence of being here in yourself while you were speaking or listening, or were you able to stay aware and connected? When you're ready, you can let your eyes open. So we're moving in incremental levels of complexity. So we started with silence, interaction with silence and just eye contact. Now we just did, you know, completely neutral content, right? Aching sensation in my shoulder, warmth in my hands. Now we're going to actually move into real content, talking about something, and experiment to see, can we practice being present while speaking or listening in a conversation. And I'm going to give you specific tools to try. There'll be very short segments of speaking for like a minute and trying putting your attention in different places to see if it can help you to stay aware as you're speaking or as you're listening. So again, we'll just continue with this artificial form of having a speaker and a listener. We'll go back to the original speaker for the first round. And the invitation is to talk about what's bringing you here today, what it is that you're hoping for or longing for. Okay? And if you didn't come here of your own volition, someone else dragged you here, then you have a few choices. You could talk about, now that you're here, is there something that you think you might want to learn or might be able to get out of being here today? Or you could just choose to talk about something else in your life. Talk about something that's going well for you, that you're interested in right now, something you're looking forward to, okay? The idea is to just talk about something that's relatively light, but that gives us enough of a story to share so that we can experiment with what's it like to be thinking and speaking while trying to stay present, okay? So, again, I'll be ringing the bell, inviting you to start and stop. When you hear the sound of the bell to stop, wherever you are, mid-sentence, mid-syllable, see if you can just stop. Just let the words go. It will feel forced. That's the point. One of the most helpful communication skills we can learn is the ability to stop speaking. You know that experience of like saying something and as the words are coming out of your mouth, you're like, this is not going to be helpful, but you can't stop. So when you hear the bell, practice just stopping. So the first speaker is there's going to be two or three rounds of speaking and stopping and speaking and stopping. It's all the first speaker. So don't trade roles until I tell you, okay? So for the first round, the instruction for the speaker, see what it's like to ground your attention in your body while you're speaking, which is what we've been doing with the body sensations or just sitting with your attention inwards. Can you be aware either of the sensations of your bottom on the chair or cushion, or maybe just feeling your hands in your lap? Can you have some awareness of your body sensations as you're speaking? Okay, so for the first round, just experiment with that. Can there be some awareness of your body sensations as you're talking about what's bringing you here today? Why did you come here, or something that's interesting to you that you're looking forward to in your life? Listeners, continue to practice listening with presence without losing yourself in the person's story. Can you maintain some awareness of yourself even as you're available and receiving what this other person is saying? Any questions about the instructions? Yeah.
As listeners, are we
just listening or are we responding? Just listening. So, if naturally you feel an impulse to nod or smile, that's fine. You don't have to kind of inhibit that. Be aware of it. But we're not responding verbally at this point. Yeah, just silent listening with presence. Okay, so as we've been doing, let's begin from a place of awareness and groundedness. So take a moment to center yourself in whatever way works for you. You know, how do you arrive? How do you feel grounded? And now whichever role you're in, whether you're the speaker or the listener, set a clear intention. Make sure you're clear about what you're practicing here. Listening with presence, or trying to stay a little bit aware of my body while I speak. I'm going to feel my hands, or I'm going to try to feel the weight, the mass of my body. Okay, starting with the breath, letting the eyes open, starting now. So notice what's happening inside. Without judgment, there's no experience you should be having. Notice any sense of energy or aliveness or vitality that's moving through your body. In particular, notice if you lost presence during that minute or so. So we'll get to try again. The point here is not to feel the same sense of calm and quiet that we feel when we're silent with our eyes closed. The point is to be aware. So we can feel energy, we can feel animated and engaged. Can we stay aware of what's happening? So we practice just feeling the body a little bit as one tool. Next, I want to invite you to practice pausing. Just like that, just like I did. Just a very short pause between thoughts, between sentences. Doesn't need to be long. What's it like to take a pause once or twice in the flow of what you're sharing? And can that help you to bring more presence into the process of speaking? Listeners, continue practicing, continue to practice listening while staying aware and connected to yourself. So again, whichever role you're in, set an intention. Same roles, same speaker, same listener. Yeah. Great question, thank you. So the question was, are we building on, are we keeping body awareness and adding a pause? My suggestion would be no. Just practice pausing. If you've been doing this stuff for a while or if that feels accessible to you, sure, fine. Try to do both at the same time. But if not, it's fine. Let go of the first tool and then just practice with pausing. Right? So we're just experimenting, seeing what helps me to have a little bit more presence while I'm speaking, to not get lost in the stream of words and thoughts. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Same topic. So just continue sharing about the same thing that you were sharing. Pick up where you left off. So taking a moment to set a clear intention about how you're practicing. Starting with a breath. Starting now. And once again, just taking a longer pause. Turning the attention inwards. And just leaving a little space to track what's happening for you. So for this last round, same speaker, same topic, new tool, I want to invite you to experiment with the pace of your speech. So whatever your normal pace of speech is, what's it like to slow it down just like half a notch, half a degree? Doesn't have to be a lot. But instead of just speaking at a normal pace, and this is what's happening, and this is how I'm doing, and this is why, what would it be like to speak just a little bit more slowly, just slightly more choicefully and deliberately? You're still speaking, you're not necessarily stopping, but you're actually aware as you're speaking that you're speaking and the pace at which you're speaking. Okay, so make it work for you, based on the pace that you normally speak at. So doing it differently signals to the mind, oh, something different's happening here, and you might find it's easier to pay attention, to be present. So experiment with slowing the pace of your speech down just a little bit and see how that affects your ability to stay present. So this will be the last round of sharing for this speaker. So once again, beginning just with a moment to set an intention, just so you're aware, okay, this is what I'm practicing. And when you're ready, you can allow your eyes to open. And then so for the last time for this speaker, just taking a moment to reflect on how that was, playing with the pace. Was that more or less helpful for you to stay present? So we'll trade roles now. So if you were the speaker, now you'll be the listener. Practicing listening with presence. Can you stay aware a little bit of yourself even as you're listening to the other person to not get lost completely in what they're saying? Maintain some awareness. And for the new speakers, for the first round, see if you could just be aware of your body. Can you stay grounded a little bit? Feel your hands, feel your the contact with the chair, or just a sense of your whole body sitting. As you share a little bit about your intention for being here, what's bringing you here today, or something else that feels of interest for you in your life right now. So once again, just taking a moment to really align your intention inside. Okay, this is what I'm going to practice. And then starting with a conscious breath. So letting the words go and just noticing what's happening inside. So for the next round, experimenting with pausing. Doesn't need to be a long pause. Just see if you can remember in the course of the next minute and a half or so to pause at least once, maybe twice, in the flow of your speech. And does that help you to have a little bit more presence? Can you be aware that words are leaving your mouth as you speak? Setting a clear intention for your practice. And continue. So did you lose presence? And what's it like to return? How can we stay aware as we're engaging with another human being? How can we not get lost in the flow and the momentum, the tumble of words? So for the next round, invitation is to experiment with the pace of your speech and to see what's it like to take your time a little bit more as you continue sharing what's bringing you here today or something of interest to you in your life. Does it support you to be more present, to have access to all of those benefits that we named earlier? Choice, non-reactivity, patience, more information, to slow the pace of your speech down just a little bit. Try it out and see. So once again, starting with the breath and starting now. It's fairly common at this point to start to feel frustrated with me. That's okay, I can handle it. So we're just exploring, right? What's it like? What's it like to go in and out of interaction and silence? To try to bridge that gap and bring more awareness into the conversation. So there's one final round here. So we're going to release the form of having a speaker and a listener. This is something that a colleague of mine who I teach with sometimes has dubbed the advanced practice of ordinary conversation. So having experimented now for the last 10 or 20 minutes with these different ways of staying present while speaking or listening, feeling your body, pausing, slowing down, I want to invite you to just chat together. Not about what you shared, but about the process of the activity. What you learned, what you noticed, okay? Like, oh, it was really hard, or it was really easy, or I was really bored, this is frustrating. Whatever was going on for you, and whatever kind of insights or information you gleaned from the activity, compare notes a little bit. But as you're doing it, see if you can use one of the tools that we just explored to stay more present as you're speaking and listening. I won't be ringing a bell in the middle. Okay, it'll just be about 4 or 5 minutes to share. Try to be conscious of the other person and leave space for them to share also if you're feeling really animated so that both people have time to share. You might choose to pause together One person might decide at a certain moment to initiate, to just say, how about we pause for a moment? You can do that here. Okay? They won't look at you weird. Any questions about the instructions before we begin? So continue your practice. Can you be aware? Can you stay present while you're speaking, while you're listening, just in the flow of a very short, light exchange? Right? This is the foundation. If we can't do this here, at Sims, at a day long, when we're not talking about anything intense, right? How are we going to expect to do it in a really heated moment? This is a training exercise. Use it wisely. Practice being present with this other person while you're speaking and listening. You might ground, you might pause, you might play with the pace of your speech. So take a moment to choose which tool you want to work with silently inside. Feeling your body, pausing or slowing down. And then when you're ready, allow your eyes to open. Let's all start together with a breath, if you like. So for the last time in this configuration, taking a deliberate pause together. And then just reflect back on the last 5 minutes, you know, what helped you to stay present, if anything. How quickly did you lose it? Were you able to come back? So I invite you to thank or acknowledge your partner in whatever way feels authentic to you. Thank you. Hopefully to be continued. Yeah. And let's come back to the large group. Lori? Could you give this to Katie at the desk? Yeah, thanks. Okay. So I'd love to hear a little bit about your experiences, what you learned or noticed, or what kinds of questions or insights or challenges came up during this last half hour or so. Anyone like to share? Yeah.
I noticed as I tutored myself back.
Uh-huh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll just repeat so for anyone who couldn't hear, she was just saying, she noticed intuitively kind of pausing in the first part when it was just to ground in the body, and then when we were pausing, intuitively slowing down a little bit, and that there was some sense of it being innate a little bit. How many people noticed something similar, that just in trying to be present, you were already pausing or slowing down? Yeah. Yeah. I had a very similar experience. One of the things I said to Lori, who I was working with, was that those three tools don't really feel separate to me. It's like when I'm grounded, I'm naturally going a little bit more slowly, and it's like being more present itself means that I'm going to feel my body, I might pause or slow down a little bit. But what's neat about it is that when we're not present, we can use those forms to help bring us back. Other experiences or questions? Yes. Thank you. So a few things this person's sharing, and again, I'll just summarize for the ability to hear. So the experience you're describing is called state dependency. It's actually a psychological phenomenon, which is that certain experiences are more easily accessible or remembered dependent on a certain context or environment. So for you, the experience of being mindful and slowed down and present and pausing is associated with this particular space because you practice here, so it's easier to do these tools when you're here and harder to do them when you're out in your life. Anyone have a similar experience who comes to Sims regularly? Yeah. So, right, so the idea, as you're pointing to, is to start to bridge that and to begin to practice with them in our life, but that takes wanting to do it. It takes really setting the intention at home or at work or with specific people, finding ways to make new associations, to slow down, to pause, to remember. One other thing that your comment brings up that I want to be very clear about, you mentioned that during your life you'll often interrupt or talk over people and that you're wanting to shift that pattern. The point of these practices is not that all of us would speak in the same way and deeply all the time. Because in some cultures, beginning to speak before someone else is finished is means that you love them and that you're interested in what they have to say. And if you're quiet and you don't interrupt, it's insulting. New York, in my family, we're Jewish, Italian families. So it's, there's different cultures where that sense of space is very different, and the meanings are different in terms of how we interact. So I want to be really clear here that these training exercises are not meant to make us all the same in how we speak. It's not that I want all of you to leave now speaking slowly and pausing all the time. I want you to leave here being able to be more aware in your conversations and to have more flexibility and choice and to find your own way of doing that. And then based on the context of your life or the relationship, you're going to show up differently. And that applies for all of the tools that we're learning. Other experiences or comments? Thank you. It sounds like there was some deeper experience for you of just being aware of what it's like to be with another human being in a way that's mutual. Yeah. And being aware of that level of belonging or being seen or mattering in some way through the interaction or the relationship.
Like I was just out there.
Yeah, right. That's great. How many people can relate to what this person's saying, noticing that difference? I mean, that's huge, really. That's huge. And because that's the foundation of skillful communication. So that's worth the cost of admission. Seriously, if we can do that in our life and remember, just keep coming back, just keep bringing our center back in. We lose our center. It goes out through our eyes, through our ears, into the environment, into other people. So we keep bringing our center back. When we don't have a center, we don't have a place from which to engage and choose and navigate things. When we have a center, now, what did you say? I'm not so sure about that. How am I going to relate and approach? We can really start to get into it. And then we can start to apply some of the other tools that we'll be looking at in terms of how do I listen, how do I speak my truth in a way that's going to be heard, and so forth. Great. Yeah, so the support of the listener helping you to stay present and how nourishing that was, and recognizing the difference when the conditions are different, when the other person isn't really listening or when it's fast-paced. And so one of the training principles that I use is we start small where it's easy. If you want to learn to swim, you don't go in the ocean on a stormy day. You go in a pool, in the shallow end. So we're in the shallow end of the pool right now, right? Just learning these tools, breaking them down, and then we take one, and then we say, okay, let's start to try to apply this at at a normal pace in a conversation where the other person isn't just a silent blank wall, like, you know, just a silent blank presence for us to speak to. Yeah, thank you. Right. Yeah, thank you. So I'll just repeat. The first part was just feeling grateful and some permission to interrupt culturally, which is kind of a pattern. And so some relief and gratitude there. But then also recognizing that the pause gives more of a space to reflect and actually be aware, is what I'm about to say really important? Do I actually need to say this? And that it sounds like feeling empowering in some way. Yeah. How many people can relate that the pause gave you more sense of choice over what we're going to say? And is this really... Yeah, so noticing that when listening with presence, very it felt very serious and kind of the face was very... If we want it to, if we're practicing in that way, yeah, you know, it's really common for these tools to feel awkward at first because they're new, some of them, and so it's bound to be a little bit strange or uncomfortable or... How many people had the experience when you were listening to your partner of feeling like your attention was going back and forth, like it was with them and it was with you and it was with them and it was with you, yeah? And it's kind of this flipping back and forth. So that's another thing that happens very, very often, and that over time, that starts to balance out where it feels like I can be aware of both of us at the same time. I'm not like 100% here, but I'm also not lost in you. There can be space for both of us, right? And that's really where intimacy comes from, is when there can be the sense of mutual presence. Both people are here and aware together. I think that it definitely can and will get lighter. It's different for different people, you know, and so for whatever reason, some of your conditioning associates listening fully with being serious. And so you might just notice that over the course of the day today and to see what would it be like to just listen lightly, to not have to, like, work for it, right? Because listening is something that, or I should say hearing, is very easeful. The ears just hear. And in a similar way, the heart can listen when we're not preoccupied with our thoughts or agendas or emotions or judgments. The heart naturally listens and receives experience. It's not something that we need to put a lot of energy or effort into. The energy and the effort is into making the space and saying, okay, no, set that down. No, set that. That's later. Just be here. No, not now. That's where the energy is. Not, I gotta listen. Keep listening. That's actually gonna shut down the space to listen. Is that making sense? Yeah. I'm seeing hands, and I'm also wanting to move on to another activity. So I'm wondering if it can wait till the next. Yeah, okay. I also want to hear, though. I'm curious at the same time. Why don't go ahead? Right. Great. Yeah. No, that's great. So I mean, you're pointing to that, like just customizing these tools, right, and finding what works for you. And so it might be the sensations in your hands. It could be a movement, or like you're saying, stroking a finger. It could be one of the things I mentioned in the book is like carrying a stone, you know, holding something in your hand that has a little weight to it. So finding what works for you to anchor and be present. So this is the first foundation, to lead with presence, to really show up, and to learn how to do that again and again and again, to keep coming back to the sense of being here, which then gives us access to all the other tools and wisdom and intentions that we have in a conversation or a relationship. As we pay attention, as we become more aware and more mindful, we may start to notice some of the intentions that are present in our conversations and which ones are helpful and which ones aren't helpful. And so this is the second training, the second foundation, which is to choose intentions that are going to be more likely to build the kinds of relationships and conversations that we want in our life and in our community. So there's a lot that could be said here, a lot that we could explore, but I just want to maybe focus on one or two specific things for today. So the first is why intention is so important. So when you're having a conversation with somebody and they're saying one thing with their words, but their body language, their tone of voice, their facial expressions, their gestures are saying something else, which do you listen to? Which do you trust? We trust that nonverbal communication, right? We trust that gut feeling that says, they don't like me, or they're trying to pull one over on me, right? Even if, you know, everything looks pretty on the surface. So this is why intention is so important on one level. So much of our communication is nonverbal. And what's shaping that nonverbal communication is our intention, is where we're coming from inside. So intention is the motivation, the quality of direction in our heart and our mind. It's what's driving us to speak or act. Where we're coming from, that's our intention. So where are we coming from in our conversations? Are we just trying to be right, to get our way, to win? You know, are we wanting to disappear? Don't see me, everything's fine. And what's the result of those intentions? So a lot of our intentions in conversation and communication are set in place and conditioned by our upbringing and through the socialization process, particularly around difference. Whenever there's a conflict or difference, we, through, you know, early experiences and through, you know, observing the adults around us in our life or the media, we learn, well, when there's a difference, someone's going to win and someone's going to lose. Someone gets what they want, someone doesn't get what they want. So how am I going to deal with that? That's the framework that we inherit from our society, and then we engage and have intentions accordingly. And when that's the view, when that's the belief, win, lose, right, wrong, then the natural intentions that come up are things like to protect ourselves, to defend ourselves, to judge, to blame, to attack, to be right. And all of these kinds of intentions put us in an adversarial relationship with the other person. They're not conducive to actually having a productive dialogue. They shut down the possibility of really hearing one another and listening. So we want to work to shift our perspective from this either-or, win-lose, right-wrong, to one of learning and creativity. What can I learn here? Maybe there's a possibility of something new happening. What would it be like for us to work together? Maybe we can find a new way of doing this where that works for both of us, what's called a win-win in communication and mediation fields. When that's our approach, the interest in learning, working together, being creative, different intentions arise. Intentions to understand, to be curious, to listen, to work together, to be patient, to stay grounded, to have integrity. And these create a very different kind of atmosphere. So one of the things we're trying to do with our intentions is to create a certain atmosphere, certain kinds of conditions that are conducive to dialogue, to hearing one another. So as I said last night, the two primary intentions that I encourage people to strengthen and cultivate as a default. These aren't the only useful intentions in conversation, but they're really helpful as a default, are the intentions to be curious and to care. So curiosity means we're genuinely interested. How can I get interested? And care means that we're connected to what matters to us. Doesn't mean that we like everyone, that we necessarily, I want you to be my best friend or something. But we see that this person suffers just like me. And we're connected to our sense of compassion or kindness inside. So how do we do this? It's a nice idea, right? But how do we actually do it, particularly when we're having an argument or when we disagree with someone? How do we come from curiosity and care? How do we cultivate these intentions? So this is where the training, the third step, the training in attention comes in. We can learn to focus our attention in such a way that it helps us to have a helpful intention. So what I'm talking about is learning to focus on what matters, which is the third step. To become aware of and inquire into the deeper needs or longings behind our behaviors, words, and choices. So this is a central principle in nonviolent communication and also in humanistic psychology, which is the premise or the view that for human beings, we do stuff because there's something that matters to us. It's a very basic assumption that human beings do things because of something that matters to us. We eat because we're hungry. We go to sleep because we're tired. We come to a day long because we want to learn something. That our actions, which are referred to as our strategies, are attempts to meet more basic underlying shared needs. And that as human beings, part of what makes us human is that we have these fundamental shared needs. And that these needs are motivating us to act as human beings. So what's meant by a need is, by definition, it's something that we do want rather than something that we don't want. It's not tied to a specific person, location, time, place, or object. Like, I need you to do this for me. No, you're the strategy, and you doing this is going to meet some need of mine. They're shared. They're more universal than not. Okay, so we have physiological needs for food, air, water, shelter, medicine. We have relational needs for understanding. And then we have what might be called higher needs or spiritual needs, needs for meaning, to contribute, needs for creativity, needs for peace, for beauty, for communion or transcendence. So the question is not whether or not we have needs as human beings. This is a reality of being alive. The question is, how are we relating to them? It's very obvious to see that we need food, air, water, and shelter, right? If you don't have air, you go unconscious pretty quickly. If you don't have water, you can last a few days. If you don't have food, you can last a few weeks. Right? But human beings need understanding, connection, love, belonging, in the same way that we need food, air, and water. The damage is just further delayed in time. The strange and destructive creatures. How are we relating to them? And this is where the Dharma, this is where the teachings of the Buddha come in, which is to learn the suffering and the stress that arises from grasping, from relating to our needs from a place of I have to have this and I need it and it must be this way and if I don't get it, it's gonna, right? To more of a sense of I value this, I long for this, I want this, and I recognize that it's not up to me. We can't have all of our needs met all of the time. That's what it is to be alive. But that doesn't mean we can't invite others to engage with us and to engage with them. But are we doing that from a place of must and should and have to? Or are we doing that from a place of more spaciousness? So this is the investigation and some of what we'll be looking at in the next part of our workshop. So there was a question or a comment. Unconscious influences like
past history.
Sure. I mean, I would see that as fitting within the framework that those unconscious influences are impulses towards unmet needs that are just below the threshold of awareness, right? So, you know, so if in my family of origin, if I didn't feel seen or heard, right? And so there's this deep unmet need to feel seen and heard and to know that I matter, but I'm not really aware of it. And now the way that I relate is I'm kind of speaking really, really kind of loudly, and all of my energy is very, very forward because I want people to see me and to hear me, and this is how I relate because this is just how I've become to make sure that you're hearing me. But I'm not really aware of that need. The need is still there. It's just unconscious. But we can become conscious of it, and we can start to learn. So I told a story last night about the power of being aware of our needs. Individually, when we're aware of what matters to us, this is another way I talk about needs, is just what matters, what's important to us. Because that word need is very charged, right? It's like, I need this. That's not so much the meaning. It's not that demanding energy. It's what matters to us. When we're aware of what matters to us, we have more choice. If I'm aware of why I'm doing something, I can evaluate, is this going to help or not? So the story I told for those who weren't here was about a person who went to a workshop, heard this teaching, and on the drive home, when he was reaching for a cigarette, he paused and asked, what do I need right now? And he realized that he wanted to take a break, he wanted to relax and take his mind off things. And so he quit smoking. He said, I don't need to smoke to relax and take my mind off things. If we're not aware of our needs, we're just automatically engaging in behaviors without knowing why. So that's personally, interpersonally. When we're aware of our needs and the other person's needs, we can really start to understand one another. We have more room to hear one another and to work creatively. So this is what's absent so much in public discourse. Whatever issue it is we're looking at is the conflicts is just this. It's just butting heads. It's build a border wall, don't build a border wall. You know, raise taxes, don't raise taxes. You know, cut funding for reproductive rights, don't cut funding for reproductive rights. There's no discussion about why. What needs are being met? Why build a border wall? Why not build a border wall? What are the underlying needs behind that? And when we can start to actually be aware of that and talk about that, now there are more options. When we're aware that this is about, you know, having a strong economy or having safety for a community or, you know, living manifesting the values of the United States as a country and, you know, welcoming those who are in need. All of these different values that are at play that are not actually being addressed. So whether it's on the collective level or personally in our life, to be able to get to this other level of why, of what matters. And this is to go back to the coming from curiosity and care. How do we come from curiosity and care? Listen for what matters. Remember this idea, there's something that matters here. What is it? Can I get curious? Can I listen for the needs here? So I want to do a couple of practices. And the first is just a fun little game, which is to help to start to make this connection in our mind between what we do and why we do it. So what we do is a strategy. Why we do it is the need that it's trying to meet, what matters underneath it. So I'm going to just choose something that a human being might do or say, and then I'm going to ask for people to guess what underlying need And this might be an appropriate time to try to pass out these packets. If there aren't enough, some folks might have to share. And if you don't get one, I can send you a PDF later. So while the packets are coming around, and there's a list of human needs somewhere in there. Someone could tell us, there's a table of contents. So someone could tell us what page the human needs list is.
Page 9,
okay. So I'm going to choose an action, and I want you to we'll take 2 or 3 guesses. What needs could this be trying to meet? And so the idea is when you want to guess, raise your hand, and I'll toss you the ball. And then you'll look for someone else who has a hand up, and you'll toss the ball to them. Question? Yes. Yeah. So is there a section of the room that doesn't have? So for those who have like all 4 in a row, could every other person just pass them over? We probably have like half the number we need. So make sure one packet for every 2 people. And you also don't need to look at the packet. You can just use your own wisdom and life experience. So taking a walk in the park. Somebody's taking a walk in the park. What needs are they trying to meet? Yeah, Carol.
Rest and relaxation.
Okay, so she snuck 2 in there. Rest and relaxation. So someone else, what need could that be trying to meet? So Carol, look for someone whose hand is up. Make sure they see you and then toss the ball to them.
Fitness,
well-being. So one more, taking a walk in the park.
Joy.
Okay, so the 3rd person who gets the ball, you're going to choose another action, something a human being might do or say, human behavior. Choose anything, positive or negative, and then as a group, we'll guess needs that might be trying to be met.
Eating dessert.
Okay, so eating some dessert. What needs are we trying to meet by eating some dessert? Anyone have a guess? So wait for the ball. That's how the game works.
Pleasure.
Yeah, so a need for pleasure. What else?
Reward.
A need for reward. So this is part of the exercise. So is reward a need? So I would, for me, so there's not a Bible that says this is a need and this isn't a need, even though you have a needs list in front of you. The definition of a need is it's shared. It's universal, it's more universal, right? And it's something that when we hear it, it's like our heart opens a little bit. Something inside says, yeah, I want that for me and I want that for other people. So when I hear the word reward, it doesn't give me that sense of like, yeah, like that's a universal, fundamental human need. So I think that reward is probably still on the level of a strategy. It's a little bit deeper than dessert. But so the way to identify the need is then to say, okay, if I had a reward, then what would that give me? If the reward is part of what I'm wanting, what matters about that? Why do I want a reward? What's underneath that? Any guesses? Great. So a feeling of joy. So notice the difference between I want a reward and I want some joy. Okay? So we're trying to train ourselves to get to that other level. Eating dessert, one more need, look around.
A sense of pleasure.
So that one was said already, so let's get one more.
Self-care,
okay. Would you like to choose another behavior or action? Okay, so volunteering to help someone out. What needs are you trying to meet? Integration. Meaning like feeling integrated in a community or integrating in oneself? Giving and receiving. Okay, so a sense of mutuality of giving and receiving. How about raising your voice and yelling? What needs are you trying to meet? Need for power. Mm-hmm. Very important human need to feel like we have agency and power in our life. It's a Nerf ball. You're not going to break anything. Don't worry. Self-expression. So So you get the sense of how this shifts our relationship to what's happening, right? If someone's raising their voice and yelling, how do we stay connected to curiosity and care? What matters to this person? Maybe they want to be heard. Maybe they're feeling helpless and they want some sense of power. Maybe they need to express their pain. They need some self-expression. That doesn't mean that we condone them yelling at us. It doesn't mean we agree with their action. It just means we now have a different way of understanding and relating to what's happening. We can stay connected to curiosity and care by focusing on what matters, by listening for the needs underneath it. So this is a very powerful and transformative tool to shift our attention to try to understand what matters here. What are the needs underneath this person's words or actions or behaviors, or underneath our words or actions or behaviors? So I'd like to take this tool now and do a guided reflection, applying it to our own life, to a situation. To a situation where some need of yours wasn't really met. Someone did or said something that you didn't particularly enjoy. Now, very important, before you get ready to jump into the most painful, difficult thing that's happened to you in the last few months and work through it at the day long at Sims, remember the training principle that I mentioned earlier when the comment came up over here, shallow end of the pool. Okay, we're learning a new tool, we're learning a new skill. So we don't want to start by diving into the deep end. You might just end up feeling overwhelmed and dysregulated. Okay? So choose something that there's enough significance there that you have something to work with, but don't choose the most painful, difficult thing that's going on for you right now. On a scale of 1 to 10, choose a 3, maybe a 4. Now, I know there's a few of you in the room here who have been studying nonviolent communication for many years. You know, use your own wisdom, make your own choice if you want to choose something harder, if you've been working on these tools and you feel like you have more capacity. But if you're newer to this, this is your first or second time being exposed to it, please choose something that's not too intense. So think of a situation. Could be recently, could be in the past. You know, something didn't go the way you were hoping. It could involve another person. It might not have involved another person. Some needs of yours weren't met, you didn't really enjoy. So the first step is just to think of a scenario. And try to let that become really clear in your mind. Really remember the details, where you were, what happened, what didn't happen. Okay, so it doesn't need to be the perfect situation. Just whatever comes to mind first is fine. You can continue scanning as I offer the next instruction. So usually when something goes awry, we don't like what happened, usually we focus on what's wrong, what we don't want. So the next step is to actually see if you can be creative enough to think about, okay, what would have worked for me? In this situation, if it's another person, what could they say or do, or what could they have said or done that would have met some of my needs more, that I would have enjoyed? See if you can come up with a concrete action or statement, some strategy. How could things have gone differently that you would have enjoyed? Try to make it really specific. What would you have liked to have seen? Maybe it's just the person saying, hey, I'm so sorry that didn't work out, you know? But just try to come up with something specific that could have happened, could have been said or done that would have worked better for you. And notice what it's like to just shift your attention to that, to what it is that you do want. Okay, and now we're going to start inquiring. So now that you've got some specific strategy or action in mind, something this person could have done or said, or something that could have happened in the situation, I want to invite you to ask yourself, what matters about that to me? Kind of like we did with that word reward. So if I had that, if they did that or said that, what would that give me? So what matters about that to me? Or if I had that, then what would I have? What would that give me? don't think so much as listen. And then whatever you find, whatever comes, ask, if I had that, what would that give me? So keep asking that question until you arrive at something that feels like the bedrock. Oh yeah, that's what's important. That's what this is about for me. So you identify some deeper core need in the situation. So is there anyone who hasn't identified some need? It's very common to feel a sense of tenderness, sadness. So the last step is to let go of the situation. Just let that context dissolve as much as possible. And become aware of this need, not just personally as something that matters for you, but something that matters to all people, something that's part of being human. And see, what's it like to say to yourself silently, I really value this. I value it for me. I value it for everyone. Just take that word, that the need, and say, this matters. Maybe. See if you can connect with the sense of inherent value, almost the fullness or the wholeness of this need in and of itself, just as part of the human heart. Whether or not it's satisfied by any person or situation, can you become aware of this, the beauty, the dignity of this need in and of itself? How many people were able to identify some need in the situation? For how many people was this a new understanding? You saw or learned something different than you had before, you weren't fully aware of in some way. Uh-huh. How many people felt some pain or sadness or some mourning when you realized what need wasn't met? Yeah, it can be quite tender, yeah? How many of you were able to make that last shift, which is not always easy, particularly when there's some pain around the need, right? When it's like, ooh, that wasn't met, or that hurts. How many of you were able to sense this, the quality of that value or that need in and of itself? Raise your hand if you could contact that. Okay, great. So this is the process of first identifying what matters to us and then exploring our relationship with it. Learning to relate to it differently so that even when our needs aren't met, like I met this very, very, I really enjoyed meeting Daniel yesterday, who was doing the sound and the video. There's some very kind and, you know, easeful interactions. And so if Daniel did something or said something that didn't meet my need for respect, okay, I could still feel connected to my need for respect. I could have self-respect, know that my need for respect matters, even though in this moment or situation, Daniel wasn't, you know, meeting my need for respect in his actions or words. So transforming our relationship to our needs so that we feel a sense of connection with them regardless of the external environment. So I want to just invite some comments, or actually, first, anyone willing to share what that need was, maybe just as we did earlier this morning, to just hear a few of the words that you came to. What was it that you identified that mattered for you in the situation? Empathy. Anyone else find empathy it was empathy that you were longing for? Yeah. Other things that you identified?
It was a hope and wisdom.
Hope and wisdom. Longing for more hope and wisdom. What else?
Trust.
Wanting more trust, yeah. Yeah, to be seen, heard, and understood. That sense of like a complete acknowledgement, like a full and complete. Experiences or questions that you want to share, ask about that little reflection, anything that came up for you? Yeah. So this person is just commenting that naturally there was a movement once they identified their own need of becoming aware of the other person's need in the situation and seeing how they weren't necessarily in conflict. So you're kind of moving ahead to what we'll be looking at this afternoon, which is that sense of, you know, we want to be aware of what matters to us, and then we also want to have the empathy to stretch and be aware of what matters to the other person. And this is one of the key understandings, is that conflict tends to happen at the level of our strategies. And that the more we're able to identify what matters, the underlying needs, the deeper we go, the less conflict there is. That then we're actually looking at, you know, how are resources allocated and how do we work together to meet the needs that are present. And this is the process of collaboration and conflict resolution is to create the conditions where we can listen to each other, to try to identify what matters. Okay, what's on the table here? What's at stake? What's really important to you? What's important to me? Let's get it all out on the table. And now that we know what matters, let's look at it. How do we best address all of these needs? Yours, mine, theirs, all together.
Could have walked away.
Yeah, situation would have been differently. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, great. Yeah, sometimes having that space to connect with what matters to us, we see how... Right. So one doesn't always have the situation where the other person has curiosity and care, so how do you invite that? Let's play with that right now. So, how many people are hungry? I'm hungry. So we're going to take our lunch break in 10 or 15 minutes, and I want to just do a very brief demonstration before that to see how does some of what we've been working with look like in practice, in action. When you're engaging in a conversation and you're working to lead with presence, to come from curiosity and care, to focus on what matters, and they're not. How do you use these tools? So what I'd like to do is to see, to invite maybe two or three scenarios that you would like to see these tools in action. You know, like my sister-in-law, you know, doesn't want to have Thanksgiving at their house, and we've had it at our house the last 10 years, and I'm trying to talk to her about it. Okay, that's an example, right? And so if you volunteered that example, I would play you and you would play your sister-in-law, okay? So think if you have a situation in your life that you might want to see these tools in use, and maybe you have a situation in mind yourself with their question, I don't know, and that you would be willing to role play with me in front of the group. And I'll choose I want to hear two or three, and then I'll choose the one that I think is going to illustrate the tools the best. Do you have one? Yeah. And just in a sentence, not the whole story. Yeah, sure, a sentence or two. Try to get us. Yeah, so conversations with mom, she's focusing on what's not working and that's not so enjoyable for you. Yeah. Okay, great. Can I get one or two more, a situation that you'd like to see? Yeah. I can't quite hear you. Okay, yeah, okay. So each of these would be interesting to role play. And so I think I'm gonna go with yours, Carol, with the work situation, and invite you to play with me with some puppets. So for those who are not familiar with nonviolent communication, these puppets are something that Marshall Rosenberg, who founded nonviolent communication, created. And they're meant to sort of personify and represent the different ways that we can communicate. So the jackal is kind of our habitual conditioned way of communicating, which is a language based on blame, judgment, shame, obligation, right? You know, this is your job, you should do it. What's wrong with you? Get it together, that kind of thing. So we're going to assume that the boss has a little... We all have jackal within us. We've all kind of had this conditioning. And then the giraffe is meant to represent nonviolent communication, or sometimes called compassionate communication, which is a language that's connected to our universal feelings and needs, that's able to see the shared humanity in one another. And he chose the giraffe because it's the... land mammal with the largest heart. And also the giraffes have long necks so they can see, they can maintain perspective. But of course the jackal wasn't consulted about their role in this. And jackals are one of the only, you know, mammals known to arrange childcare. So if you push the analogy far enough, it breaks down. So let's assume that we've already set up a time to speak. Okay, so I've approached you and said I wanted to have a meeting, and you said yes. So now we did that first negotiation of actually agreeing to have the conversation. So do you call your boss by his first name or?
Her name is
Vivian. Vivian, there's my male privilege conditioning. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Right, Vivian. So. Thanks so much for meeting with me, Vivian. I really appreciate your taking the time to talk a little bit.
Sure. It's good to see you. How's your year going?
Wow, thanks for asking. I'm really touched to know that you want to hear that. Well, actually, it's part of what I wanted to talk about. So first thing, did you just notice that I took a moment to receive the generosity of the question and to invest in the relationship? So just a moment of empathy. Even though she was asking me a question, I received what she said. And that's building the relationship and creating the conditions for us to be able to hear each other. So yeah, you know, I'm glad you asked. Actually, it's been really hard in some ways. I find myself continually overwhelmed and drained, and I have some concerns about the amount of responsibilities and duties that are on my plate. And so I wanted to talk about that because not only do I really care about this work, but I want to do the best job that I can do, and I want it to be sustainable. I care about this work, and I want this job to be sustainable so that I can continue contributing in the best way possible. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how it has been for me and some of the responsibilities on my plate. I'm just wondering how it is for you to hear that I've been struggling with that. So pause. So really important moment in the conversation. Really important choice point, which I talk about more in the book, these choice points, right? So she just shared a lot with me. So now, if I'm conscious, if I'm practicing these tools, I have a choice. I can self-express, I can say what's going on for me, or I can try to understand where she's coming from. I'm going to choose to try to understand where she's coming from, to listen for the needs behind what she's saying, so that she feels heard, and so that I can make sure that I'm understanding the values that she's advocating for, right? If I just stay on the level of, I disagree, I have too much work, now we're just locked in that same old conflict that's been happening for the last number of years. Thanks. I hear that we've talked about this before and you're aware of it. And I want to make sure that I'm getting you know, some of the main concerns for you in your role and how you understand my role, so that I can kind of contextualize the conversation. So let me tell you what I'm getting and tell me if it's right. So one thing I'm hearing is that Part of being in the administrative role is shouldering a lot, and that, you know, you have a value and an expectation for those in leadership positions to really manage a large amount of work, and that I'm wondering if part of that is maybe just a little bit about your value for leadership or maybe teamwork, that everyone's kind of doing a lot. That was one thing I heard. And then the other thing I'm really hearing is something about, you know, other staff kind of looking up to us and wanting to set a tone for the workplace around a certain kind of work ethic. Is that kind of what you're driving at?
Yeah.
Mm. Right, yeah. So you're saying, like, we're all in it, you know, all of us are kind of feeling that feeling of being overwhelmed and just barely keeping our head above water. I'm glad you mentioned that, actually, because I see the same thing, and I share both of your concerns, both for the happiness and the well-being of our team and the productivity that, you know, ultimately we do need at the end of the day to make sure that we're getting our work done. So I'm actually really relieved to know that we're on the same page about that, that we want to try to balance these two. And, you know, I might be off here, so tell me if I am. Notice little things like that I'm saying, right? I'm making it really easy for her to agree with me or to say no as I'm proposing this. You know, I might be off here, so tell me if you don't see it this way, but it sounds like you kind of also recognize that it's a lot, that we're all handling a lot, and in some ways it's a little bit too much, but it sounds like we're both kind of in this bind and not really sure how to do it otherwise. Am I hearing that right? Wow. I mean, I'm just for the first time, Vivian, actually taking in that, like, I mean, this must be even more stressful for you because you're holding even more than I am. And I can imagine it really takes a toll. Yeah.
I'm not trying to be nice, right?
I know. Yeah, you're just being authentic. Just be authentic, yeah. So let's pause here. So you could see where this could go from here, right? We've now we're on the same team. We've identified the shared needs, and we also arrived at this place of actually, like, oh wow, like, I see you more human now. And now you know that I see you, and so it's not just about me and I need less work and you have to take care of me. And what made that possible was my willingness to try to understand, to come from curiosity and care. So when she threw up that first wall, right? We've talked about this before. Everyone has a lot of work. We just need to get the job done, right? I listened for what was underneath that, you know, to say, okay, well, what matters to you here? Let me see if I can hear you. And then we unfolded from there to this very different place. And so at this point in the conversation, I might try to just acknowledge, like, wow, you know, I'm actually feeling really relieved to know that we're on the same page and that we see the same problem, that we've identified it. And what I would love to do, Vivian, is I would love to, whether it's just you and I or we bring in one or two other people and form a working committee, to brainstorm, how can we have more balance here at work? Maybe it's not shedding responsibilities, but it's finding ways to have more well-being at work. Like everyone takes a 5-minute walk after lunch, or would you be open to either you participating or some of us on the staff getting together and just brainstorming a bunch of ideas for more balance between well-being and productivity, and then bringing it back to you to evaluate some of those proposals, right? We can, thank you. So in the few minutes before lunch, I first want to check with you, Carol, and see, you know, how was that for you? And was there anything that you, any insights or learnings that you had in doing that role play that you want to share?
I think it was kind of interesting to put myself in her shoes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, I actually, in your role, one of the impulses I had, which the conversation didn't unfold this way, but one of the things that I was feeling inspired to ask was, how do you handle it?
Yeah.
Like, just to learn from her, like, I see how much pressure you're under. How do you deal with it? What works for you? Right? And what about from others? Any comments or questions about observing that you want to make or ask?
Sorry. That was just something that's
right. Sure. Yeah, and then it's a different angle, right? It's a different approach. So had that been the message I got from her, I wouldn't have gone there. I would have gone more to the work, to the shared value for productivity. I wouldn't have gone into the personal, right? Because it's a really important point. All of us in different areas of our lives have different comfort levels around our willingness to be vulnerable, right? And that's different depending on the context, and it's different depending on the person. If you leave here today assuming that the way to handle every conversation and conflict is to try to connect at the deepest level personally, you know, 70% of the time it's going to backfire because a lot of people aren't going to be interested in that. So the aim is to connect at the level that's appropriate to the context. And in a professional situation, a lot of the time, the level that's appropriate is the shared needs for the workplace, which are around productivity, excellence, quality, teamwork, clarity, well-being, balance. We can have a conversation about that and not go into the personal stuff. And I can frame the concerns that I have around, you know, I'm really seeing this as affecting not only my productivity, but the morale of the staff and the productivity of others. And I'm really concerned that we're not going to hit our targets if we can't find some balance, some a little bit more downtime and give in the demands, right? So that's going to be, that would be a different angle. Yeah. Choice point, right? Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, the choice points is another way to practice presence, and I talk about this in the book, in addition to the ones we practice, but just being aware that every moment of a conversation, if we're present, if we're aware, we have a choice whether to speak or to listen. And listening doesn't just mean staying silent. Listening might mean asking a question, and this is what we're going to look at in the afternoon when we come back. We're going to look at a little bit more, how do we do that? I call it like an Aikido move, when somebody says something to us that's confrontational or aggressive or blaming, how do we respond in a way that kind of just transforms and diffuses the energy? So let's, just a few announcements as we transition to lunch. So first, invitation to stay in touch. This is what I do, and I'm able to do it because people like you have interest in learning what I have to offer. So if you're interested in learning more or staying in touch, I would really love that. And the best way to do that is through my email list. I send out 2 emails a month. I write them myself. Every email has something. I try to put something of value in it that's going to be useful for you in your life, like an article I've written, a talk that I've given. I know some of you here are on my email list. So there's email lists on both tables to sign up. There's also my teaching schedule and some free postcards. Feel free to take any of those. And then I also want to mention, if you want to go deeper with this stuff, with this material, there are some resources in your packet for other organizations and people teaching here in Seattle and elsewhere. I'm also teaching a 12-week online course that starts in a couple of weeks. I'll be teaching it live. It's not pre-recorded. There's a lot of room for this kind of Q&A and demonstration, so it's a really great way to learn the tools. And I'll be going through the book chapter by chapter over the 12 weeks and teaching it. There are discounts if you register with a friend or with a small group. And if finances are an issue at all, I'm happy to give out scholarships. I really just want this to be accessible and available for those who want to learn it. So feel free to pick up one of those flyers. And then, of course, we have plenty more books. It's the marketing pitch. Question, yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah, so if you didn't get a packet and you would like one by email, so if you have a packet in your hand and you don't want it and would prefer to have it electronically, please find someone else to give it to. That's number one. But if you would like one electronically, nope, not going to happen. Okay. Write your name on my email list. Just print really clearly so I can read your email, and then just write next to it, packet. If you want the packet but you don't want to be on my email list, which is fine, I won't take it personally, you could just write a note for that, or just unsubscribe. When you get the welcome email, just unsubscribe. It's fine. You get like a free guided meditation series and an ebook when you sign up. So you would get that anyway, which is nice. Donna, so those of you who maybe are newer to Seattle Insight Meditation Society, the whole center is run on donation. And this is the tradition that's been practiced for over 2 millennia that has kept these teachings of Buddhism alive, is that they're offered freely and they're supported by those who come. So there's an invitation to donate to support Seattle Insight, to pay the rent, to keep the lights on, to help bring teachers here. So if you would like to see more of this happening in the community here, please feel free to make a donation to Seattle Insight Meditation Society. There's a basket out there. There's also a basket to donate for my work. I don't get paid. There's no registration fees. So give in a way that feels good. Don't give too much. Don't give too little. Find the amount that feels good for you. If you don't have a lot of financial resources, there are other ways to give. You can come and volunteer at SIMS. If you'd like to help out with my work, send me an email and find some administrative support that you can do. So let's take an hour for lunch. It's about 12:35. So we'll start again at 1:35. Anything else I missed, Tim? Yeah, a few more logistics.
So just to reemphasize Oren's point, that the money you pay for the registration, none of that goes toward Oren. Yeah, the registration is, you know, that's whatever you, there's a suggested amount for that, but none of that goes toward Oren. And if I could have a couple people help me set up some tables, we can have this area over here for eating lunch. Please don't eat on the pads, just so we can keep them nice as possible. And if you need an idea of where to go to lunch, back on the back table we have a laminated sheet for some local restaurants. Any other questions about lunch? In silence, no silence?
Let's not do silence. So the invitation would be to take one tool from this morning, pausing, slowing down, feeling your body, or paying attention to needs, the sense of what matters, just listening for that in your own choices or the choices of others around you, and practice that during lunch. If anyone would like their book signed, I'll be hanging out at that table about a quarter after or 20 after. Feel free to just come over and happy to sign a few books on the lunch break. Okay, thanks. Have a great lunch.